ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. This month, YPulse, the leading authority on Gen Z and millennial opinions and behaviors, released a new trend report on young consumers' state of mind. The Gen Z and millennial generations were already characterized by high levels of stress before COVID-19. So unpacking how they're feeling after 9 months of a global pandemic is something that businesses need to understand because it impacts their consumers, their employees, and the culture at large. Mary Lee Bliss, YPulse's VP of Content, is here to discuss what YPulse's research can tell us. Mary Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I am so looking forward to digging into the detail of this latest trend report. But first, before we do that, could you give us a quick overview of the methodology, number of people surveyed for this study?
Absolutely. So YPulse is completely focused on youth, Gen Z, and millennials. And every month we survey 13 to 39 year olds across a variety of topics, including a specific trend report survey, where all the stats that we're going to be talking about today are coming from. So we survey 1,000 13 to 39 year olds in the US for these surveys. And that data is within a 3% margin of error. So we're really looking very closely at how young people are feeling about whatever particular trend we're asking them about at that moment.
Awesome. So in our previous conversations, we often find ourselves talking about how COVID has accelerated things. But when we're looking at mental health and young consumers, we're looking at a population that was already pretty stressed out and also pretty aware of their own emotional fragility. So we're really thinking about how these external factors have exerted additional pressure onto them and what it means. So when self-reporting levels of stress, what types of increases, or are we seeing increases between pre and post COVID?
It's a great question. So we've talked about how Gen Z and millennials are the most anxious generations to date for some time. And actually, before COVID hit, we had fielded a survey about burnout among both Gen Z and millennials. You know, it was a huge topic of conversation and something that a lot of people were beginning to focus on, millennial burnout. We actually found that Gen Z burnout was just as much a thing.
Was this at the top of this year? So February,
yes, this was in February of 2020. And we were, you know, working to get that data out when COVID hit. So obviously a lot changed, and what we decided to do was really, instead of course, looking at that pre-COVID data, we had to really see what the impacts of this year have been on young people and their mindsets. So we have that data from earlier in the year, and we compared it to our recent fielding at the end of October, and really saw very clear changes in how they were feeling. They were incredibly stressed out pre-COVID. As I said, burnout was a real thing, but we've seen either consistent numbers to those pre-COVID stress levels, and in some cases, some real increases in stress and anxiety. So where we see pretty consistent things is where their stress level is. Pre-COVID, 65% of young people said that they constantly feel stressed. Now that 67%, that stayed very much the same. But we've seen increases in things regarding the future. Their feeling that something bad will happen in the next 5 years has increased from 48% before COVID to now 58%. And we see that they're feeling that the world is a chaotic place, not too surprisingly, has increased as well. But then we also see, you know, COVID-specific shifts. So their views on how COVID has impacted them have changed as well. In the beginning of the pandemic back in March, we had 38% of young consumers feel that their life, their mental health would be impacted negatively by coronavirus. Now, over half tell us that their mental health has been negatively impacted by coronavirus. So, you know, even as the pandemic has grown, that COVID specific impact has increased and the toll on their mental health has gotten worse.
Right. Well, I think that also, as we really get our arms around what it is, what it means, the length of time. One of the things that I found interesting in your report was that, yes, there was the something catastrophic would happen in the next 5 years had increased. But when they talked about their own personal anxiety around their future, which was already high, it was clocking in around 76%, that seemed to stay pretty level. And I was curious, looking at the result, should we take away that personally, they feel that, you know, their anxious outlook is about the same as it was previously, but on a, they see a wider threat to the world? How would you read into that, that difference?
Sure. Yes. I think, their stress levels and their feelings about their personal futures are as high as they were, which is very high.
Do we have any data? I know you focus on young consumers, but do you have sort of just as an anchor point where other generations are, so we really understand that this is so significantly different?
Yeah, our data is focused on Gen Z and millennials, but there is plenty of data out there about their comparative stress and anxiety. Mm. And in terms of how much they report it, you know, Gen Z and millennials are more likely to be reporting mental anxiety. And there's two reasons around that. One, they're more overwhelmed, and two, they're more open about it. They want to be able to talk about their stress levels, their mental health in a more open way. And we've written about that in the past, and we touch about that in this report as well.
Right. Right. Well, now going back to the comparison, from March 2020 to October 2020, and really seeing how the extended time frame has impacted the different areas in their lives. And so depending on what area they were talking about, if it was mental health or finance or family or physical health, romantic life, there were different shifts. There were differing shifts. What I found interesting was that finance was flat. What does that mean? Mm-hmm.
What we know about young consumers' finances is it's a mixed bag in terms of how COVID has impacted them. Mm. So some young consumers have had, you know, had an immediate financial repercussion as restaurants closed. Gen Z especially being more likely to work in retail and, you know, these jobs that, you know, were immediately disposed, felt that impact right away. We've also seen, oddly, you know, some positive impacts for employed millennials, for example, who are no longer commuting. There's been an increase in savings. Hmm. So, you know, we have seen a variety of impacts on financial situations, which, you know, as the pandemic has gone on, there hasn't necessarily been a drastic shift in how finances have been impacted.
Whereas, I see. So it's almost like at the beginning, if it was going to go south, it went south early.
Yes.
I see.
And then the longer the pandemic has gone on, these other areas, mental health, relationships with friends and family, physical health, they certainly have been more affected by the prolonged nature of the crisis.
Right. That's interesting. But still, mental health is the most impacted, right?
Yes. And I think one really interesting change that's related to that financial issue is that in the beginning, the number one thing that young consumers believed was going to be negatively impacted was their finances. But now the number one thing that they believe has been negatively impacted or will be is their mental health. So that's really changed.
That's interesting. What young consumers are describing seems like classic depression symptoms. But what's a bit alarming is the percentage. And we're looking at almost all young consumers. We're talking, you know, 87%. How does this compare to previous surveys?
So we see that their burnout is, you know, staying incredibly high. And among the number who say that they feel burnt out or have felt burnout in the past, the majority tell us that they have felt more burnt out during COVID. So the intensity of that feeling has increased. So the number who feel burnt out has remained incredibly high, the majority. And then of those, the majority tell us that they feel more burnt out during this time, which is really interesting, right? Because in essence, there's less to do. There's less filling up their schedules. But, you know, we've seen that that feeling has just shifted in terms of what's contributing to that feeling of burnout. It's not necessarily that their social schedules are so full or, you know, that they're unable to balance things because they're trying to get in and out of the office. But all of those tasks still exist and still are piling up. So the majority of young consumers tell us that in the past year, they have felt mentally exhausted, emotionally drained, a lack of energy, which are all symptoms of burnout.
So that's what I was curious about is when we define burnout, it's those depressive symptoms, right? Is that that's how right. It's defined? Okay. And so yes. Do you use when you're surveying them, are you using the word burnout or is that something that we apply after the survey and it's much more discreet, you know, I can't wake up or what have you?
Ask both. So first we ask about the symptoms that they mm-hmm. felt, and that's where we're seeing, you know, that 62% have felt mentally exhausted, which is a symptom of burnout, the majority emotionally drained, lack of energy, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then we ask specifically about burnout because it has become a term that's so mainstreamed and something that people do talk about in their just dialogues about mental health.
Well, it's interesting though, because you're right in terms of the root causes or what people would attribute it to, you know, a lot of those like my work, it's different. I mean, it may still be work, but the way you're doing the work is different. And so Gen Z and millennials have both reported degradation in mental health, but it's not the same within each cohort. Can you unpack where they diverge?
Absolutely. We really found that Gen Z has been more negatively impacted by the pandemic when it comes to their mental health. And it was really clear in a variety of ways. They're more likely to report that they have felt those symptoms of burnout, like mental exhaustion, lack of energy, being overwhelmed with all the things that they need to do at home, and even being detached from personal relationships. And they're more likely overall just to say that their mental health has been negatively impacted, or they believe it will be, by the coronavirus. 64% of Gen Z say that their mental health has been impacted negatively by coronavirus versus 51% of millennials. So significantly more.
Mm, that is interesting. And what do you think is driving that differential? Because this is really an age, you know, we define these cohorts by age. So what are the things that are contributing to this difference?
Absolutely. So obviously Gen Z is younger. YPulse's definition of Gen Z, their ages in 2020 range from 2 to 19 years old. So, you know, the cohort that we're surveying, 13 to 19 year olds, are in high school, middle school, they're teenagers, you know, about to enter college or, you know, just entering college. And, you know, that phase of life certainly is very different from a millennial who might be more settled down, have their own families potentially. So one thing that we see really impacting Gen Z's mental health is that separation from their friends and their social networks in person. So we see that Gen Z is more likely than millennials to say that because of COVID-19, they felt lonelier than they did before. And that not being able to see their friends and family in person has been a top factor of impacting their mental health this year. So that isolation really has had a really negative impact on them. But there are other things as well that we've seen Gen Z specifically struggling with. And one of them is anxiety about their future.
Mm.
Gen Z is, you know, on the brink of starting all of these big milestones that build up into a successful future. And a lot of that has been derailed. So we
that's interesting because they happen at that age, they happen fast and furious.
Exactly.
Whereas at older ages, they're much more spread out. But if you are in middle school, you want to go to, you know, high school and play sports and do various things. If you're in high school, you know, your junior year, you're applying and you want to get those things that you need in order to get into college, and you may not be able to do the traditional activities. Additionally, you're becoming an adult. So all of the things about independence are kind of locked down, and you're trapped. You not only can't you see your friends, but you're trapped with your parents.
<You know? laughs> Yeah,
double whammy for those guys.
Absolutely. No, it's been a very difficult time, and we certainly see experts as well. You know, we're not just seeing it in our data, but we see experts reporting that young people are more likely this year to be turning up at the ER for mental health reasons.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
So, you know, being on the brink of adulthood and seeing kind of these building blocks that would, you know, set them on the right path, or what they've been told is the right path to success, higher education, you know, great internships or, you know, jobs. A lot of them have seen those things derailed because of COVID, and that makes their anxiety about the future higher than millennials.
Also, I think remote learning in and of itself is challenging. Certainly.
Absolutely.
That hits Gen Z students, remote learning, but it also hits millennials who are parents. And then it also hits businesses with their employees, I would think. I personally know, I would say. It's not, you know, very, you know, unscientific, but very personal anecdotal issues with the parenting of people who are remote learning.
Yes, I always say focus group of one. I can say that juggling parenting and working from home is very difficult. And all millennial parents are feeling that challenge, whether they, you know, are working from home or not. We know that actually about half of millennial employees are currently working from home, and millennial parents are more likely to be working from home than non-parents. They're also juggling childcare, homeschooling needs, you know, with schools opening, closing, hybrid learning, taking, you know, a lot of scheduling and figuring out and balancing. So there are unique challenges that millennial parents are facing right now. And we certainly saw in our data that they're feeling it. 62% of millennial parents agree that because of COVID, they're facing challenges as a parent that no previous generation of parents has.
On that number, can you break that out by gender? I'm curious if there is a difference, because certainly I've heard what's going on around the issues of childcare as employees. It's sometimes described as a she session, where moms are often the person in the family who shoulders that burden of family and often are leaving work. That in terms of women in the workplace, this is a societal burden they tend to be bearing more greatly. And I'm curious if that's showing up in your data.
Yes, we did see indications, absolutely, that millennial moms are feeling the struggles of balancing all of these things more strongly than millennial fathers. So one instance is we asked specifically if they felt burnt out by taking care of their kids during COVID. And 29% of moms told us that they have felt burnt out because of child care during COVID, compared to 19% of dads.
Ooh, that is interesting. That's a pretty big...
You know, millennial parents are incredibly interesting in terms of their ideals about parenthood versus the realities. And what we often find is that the ideal for both parents, for mom or dad, is that they want it to be an equal partnership, that they want to be seen as both having an equal share in taking care of the kids. Everyone who is a parent knows that that's not always possible in reality. One person's job might be more demanding. It might make more sense for one person to stay home with childcare in terms of how much childcare costs.
Right.
So there are realities that get in the way. Often the intent is that they are both you know, hauling equal weight on childcare. And that's what they want to see in marketing and often in media. But when we drill down into their own lives, it's not always the case now.
Right.
Millennial dads are more involved. Absolutely. They have more face time with their kids. They're more involved than previous generations of dads are statistically. However, is it always completely equal between mom and dad? No.
Aw, shocker. Sorry.
I know. I know. We're not quite there at equality yet. Now, it's also interesting to see that when we look at that specific statement of because of COVID, I'm facing challenges as a parent that no previous generation of parents has, dads are more likely to feel that that is true than moms. Oh, so even though moms are more likely to feel burnt out, dads are feeling that they as a parental generation are facing challenges that no one else has. So dad is still feeling the stress, just maybe not in the exact same way.
Well, it's interesting too, because it could be that because everybody is home, the expectation, officially we expect you to help, but the reality is you're here, you're helping. You know, and there may be something of that in there. So we've described a lot of what is the sort of the as is. So let's unpack some of the so what, now what for businesses and brands. Some businesses are getting a boost, which may seem counterintuitive, but it's true. Which ones are those?
So, you know, it's really interesting to see overall that young people want brands to talk about mental health. And we see some really interesting impacts on the brands that we're already doing so. Brands like Headspace, the meditation and mindfulness app, or Calm, also a mindfulness app, you know, they've seen major boosts during this time. Areas that young consumers are turning to in order to take care of their mental health include beauty and self-care, include gaming, include media and entertainment. These are things that they are considering mental health tools during this time, ways that they are specifically combating stress and anxiety. They are, you know, making playlists, turning to specific shows and movies, buying self-care products. So all of these industries have actually seen boosts during this time, specifically because of the amount of stress and anxiety that young consumers are dealing with. And in fact, when we look at some of the, you know, major trends that have been happening during this year, and those brands that have seen big booms, often the reasons behind those booms and those increases in sales are because they are seeking escape and self-care and mental wellness. Even, you know, thinking about bread baking, which we talked about, you know, the last time I was on, you know, yeast flying off the shelves and flour flying off the shelves because people were stress baking. And that ties back to this desire to have escapes and stress relievers during this time.
Right, right. With entertainment, you've often done reports around just the trend. I know last year, media is medicine.
Yes.
And you've mentioned these, you know, specific mindfulness apps. Have you drilled down in terms of what content beyond, you know, that seems sort of obvious, like I'm going to learn how to meditate, I'm going to have peaceful music playing or things like that. But is horror, you know, how are, do you look at genres? Do you look at any of that? So what's popping?
So there are a couple of interesting things that we see. Absolutely, we see an acceleration and increase in this trend that we identified earlier before COVID that we called content cure, where we see that young consumers are intentionally turning to media as medicine to treat their moods and anxiety. So they are thinking, I had a bad day, I'm going to watch this, whether it's a short video or a television show or a movie, they are thinking of content as a cure for their moods. When it comes down to what kind of content that is, the specific shows, videos, movies, it's not too surprising that the number one genre is comedy. You know, they're turning to funny videos, and positive content has trended tremendously during this time. You know, pure content, things that, you know, feel wholesome and feel good and, you know, give them a little glimpse of positivity in the world. These things have been incredibly popular. Even thinking of, you know, back in the, what feels like 100 years ago, John Krasinski's Good News Show, that, you know, started trending on YouTube and then actually was, you know, picked up as a real show.
Right.
But at the same time, we see some interesting things happening with darker content. We ask about those who enjoy watching dark content, and we saw an increase from 60% in 2019 to 67% in 2020. So there are other ways that they are escaping. Might not be, you know, their top thought when it comes to, you know, what they're turning on to take care of their mental health. But we definitely see an increase in dark content as well. Horror has been trending, not just in our data, but also on streaming platforms. It's become incredibly popular year round, you know, not just around Halloween. And we also see that, you know, darker music is an outlet, you know, media that lets them feel their feelings, as they say. We see 59% tell us that they have made a playlist to listen to when they're stressed or sad. And now that sometimes means that it's upbeat and sometimes it means it's sad music. This is all thing topics that we explored in our content cure trend. We know that there's complexity when it comes to the kind of content that they turn to when they're feeling sad and depressed.
That's really interesting. With gaming, I'm curious, and we just talked about genres within entertainment. With gaming, I'm curious what, if we see differentials within the types of games. Certainly, as a parent, anecdotally, I found that I experienced a degradation of behavior from my children after playing video games. It was almost like the energy they invested in the executive functioning of the game wasn't matched with their physical exertion. So it was pretty predictable that they became monsters shortly after getting off the game. I mean, it was like you could graph it. I mean, maybe it's great for them, but not so great for parents. Is the nature of what games they're playing shifting, or is it just they are playing more games?
There's definitely a little bit of both. Okay. Gaming has been a huge outlet for young consumers during the crisis. We actually just had a gaming report that we published where we explored this in depth. And interestingly, millennial parents are very open to their kids' video gaming and are more likely to see it as a positive influence and something educational. We overall see that young consumers see games not just as an entertainment escape and escape from boredom, but also something that they do specifically to take care of their mental health. So when we ask them the ways that they are taking care of their mental health during the pandemic, playing video games is number four. It's right behind exercising, you know, within a few percentage points. So young consumers really do have this view of video games as being a mental health tool. And we saw during the pandemic, this was one of the reasons that certain games were trending, games that allow them to connect with friends, you know, Gen Z feeling so isolated, games like Animal Crossing and Among Us, and Fortnite, of course, you know, all saw huge booms because young consumers weren't just using them to play. They were using them to hang out with friends that they couldn't see in person. And to them, that is a mental health benefit. So they're really seeing both that entertainment and that mental health boost, both being incredibly important reasons that they're gaming.
Well, it's interesting because you can be social in a game in a way that it's at least not as familiar to be social while you're watching. I know that you can do watch parties with like some of the streaming platforms, but that's not pre-COVID something people were doing a lot of. Whereas if you're on Xbox, you can play with your friends. And so you're at least audio doing something with them. Other brands that aren't entertainment, gaming, or bread making, they can creatively think about these things, though, and they can apply them. For instance, airlines eventually can lean into leisure travel. People are, even if they're not working and traveling as much for work going forward, there may be a leisure component. Are there other ways in which brands that aren't maybe the obvious mental health support providers, how can they learn from this, benefit from this, leverage this?
Yeah, we have seen a huge trend in marketing in terms of what we call the anxiety economy. Huh. And brands tapping into this trend. So, you know, even pre-COVID, we were writing about how young consumers were fueling the anxiety economy, looking at products like weighted blankets, fidget spinners, you know, things that were specifically targeting their mental health and their self-care. And even brands that are completely unrelated to anxiety reduction and mental health and self-care are finding ways to tap into this trend and these products. So my favorite example of late is that Pizza Hut teamed up with Gravity Blankets to create a weighted blanket that is in the shape of and printed as a giant original pan pizza.
That's awesome.
It cost $150 and sold out immediately. Oh. So, you know, there's clearly something to be said here in terms of appealing to young people.
Right. Well, it's also, you know, funny. I mean, you know, which goes to the comedy piece. So it really hits on three, doesn't it?
It does. You know, they did it all very tongue in cheek. And I think a lot of the brands that are tapping into it, I think that's one of the keys actually for brands that are unrelated to the space, but want to speak to mental health. You know, there's really two ways that it can be done. Well, maybe more than two, but two of the main ways that I see it being done are to, you know, really provide mental health resources. We see Netflix and Victoria's Secret, you know, really JanSport as well, really speaking to young consumers about mental health, creating channels, live streams, programs and campaigns that connect them with experts or allow them to have an outlet, have questions answered. And then we have brands that are, you know, taking the lighter approach and, you know, teaming up with a self-care brand or an anxiety product, and doing it in a really lighthearted way, kind of tongue in cheek. And that's, you know, equally popular.
It's such a twofer because you sell a product, but you also get promotion, you know, the marketing on top of
it. Exactly.
So do you think that these are things, you know, we've talked a lot about acceleration of trends, that COVID just, you know, just accelerated what was already happening. And obviously we already had mental health was an issue. Do you think these opportunities are here to stay? That people who have learned self-care through some of these avenues are going to continue that? Do you think that this will continue to be a growth area for brands?
Yes, we were predicting that before the pandemic, and this year has made mental health only more important to young consumers. And, you know, they're struggling with it more than they were before. So they're looking for more resources. They're looking for more health. And, you know, it might have been taboo for brands to get involved in mental health discussions years ago, but young consumers do not see it that way. 68% of young consumers tell us that brands should be encouraging open discussions about mental health. So a large majority think that brands should be talking about mental health. We know that the majority, 78%, say that they would appreciate mental health support from brands. So this is an opportunity now. It's going to continue to be an opportunity and something that all brands really should have on their radar, if not as some focus for themselves when it comes to marketing and messaging to young people going forward.
This has been great. I think everyone will find this information really so valuable. It's absolutely fascinating. Thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.